Power Project family, how's it going? Now, a lot of you guys are lifters, athletes. You're serious about the gym, and we are too. And that's why we've been using Slingshot products for years, all right? You have the original Slingshot, obviously the glittery pink hip circle, which is my personal favorite. But if you don't like that, then you have the normal hip circle that's used to warm up the hips. But on the website, they have tons of equipment, knee sleeves, elbow sleeves, the gangster wraps right there. So you need to go check them out. And Andrew, can you tell them more about it?
Yes, that's over at markbellslingshot.com. And at checkout, enter promo code POWERPROJECT10 to save 10% off your entire order. Links to them down in the description as well as the podcast show notes.
Guys, say it, Mark. Say it, Mark. Don't say it. Don't say it.
Dinged up.
Good job.
I used to call my injuries, I used to just kind of be like, oh, that's a 2-weeker. That's a 1-weeker.
Yeah.
That's good.
I just would kind of put it in that context. Jesse Burdick was always like, man, he's like, you're actually usually pretty intuitive with that. He's like, what do you think I have right now? I'm like, that's like a 2-weeker. You'll be fine.
That is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, man. No, it's injuries are fun. Initially, when they happen, there's this feeling of catastrophe, right? You're like, oh God, not again. Oh no. Right. And then you're like, ah, well, what the fuck do I do? Like, what should I do? How can I figure this out? Then you find solutions and then you're good. I think some of the people we've had on, especially with what I have going on right now, it's healing so much faster because I employed some stuff from Kodowski. Our boy Oscar told me to do some self-myofascial release and I'm grooving right now.
Yeah, I thought it was a mistake what you told me. You know, you're using the penis pump and you were doing curls and you're using the Phoenix all at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
And then your girl walked in and something else happened, right?
Yeah, she like got mad at me, pushed me off the bed, then I crunched on my clavicle and then the
dick
pump
was
still on.
She's strong. Works out a lot.
She's very strong.
Does she have big wrists?
She has bigger wrists than, well, you know what? No, she doesn't have bigger wrists than me, but her wrists are almost my size.
Does she kind of double check and make sure you're not checking out ladies with bigger wrists than her?
Nah, man. Like, you know,
she's confident in her wrists.
The funny thing is she'll check those ladies out before I do. So I ain't even.
She'll point it out to you. She'll be like, yo, ooh, that girl had major wrists.
Yeah, she's been in a relationship with a girl before. So
what about big ankles?
Oh, that's hot.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Big ankles means that you probably have big quads. Yeah. Huh. And we know what big quads means. You have a bigger propensity for a big ass. So.
Big ankles, big wrists, big ass.
Well, not big wrists, big ass. It's more so the ankles.
I see.
The wrists, you know, you have good sized wrists. You have good sized arms and shoulders typically.
Yeah.
And then there are people like me with baby wrists.
I think also too, you don't want a girl with too skinny of arms. I see a lot of those skinny arm like models, you know, like I'm always like that arm's way too thin.
Yeah.
Looks like it's going to break.
Grab it and you accidentally bruise her because she's too fragile.
I mean, I guess to each their own, whatever you're attracted to. But for me personally, I'm like, I don't know about that.
To all the skinny people in the audience, we're not dissing you. You are beautiful as you are too.
That's true.
Yes.
But it is interesting.
But like, eat a cheeseburger.
Right. Like we were.
Laughing hurts.
We were watching, I can't remember which movie it was. It was Knocked Up. And they told her, like, oh, we can't tell you to lose weight because that's illegal, but get on a scale and whatever the scale says.
That's a great movie.
Take like minus 20 pounds and then weigh that. But it's funny because it's, I forgot her name, Katherine Heigl. I believe that's her name.
Yeah.
Like she's already thin. Like you look at her arms and it's just like rail thin. And they're just like, what the fuck? Like they want her to lose. I mean, I know it's a joke and she's already had lost the 20 pounds to get the role probably. But yeah, like when you look at in movies, like some of the chicks are like insanely skinny. Like I remember like I used to think Jessica Alba was so fucking hot. I mean, she's still gorgeous, but
she was.
But if you go back and look at some of those like movies, like Honey, her arms are extremely tiny.
She's not thick enough.
She's definitely not thick enough anymore. Yeah.
After our last episodes, so many people were in the comments like, Mark, you like them fat chicks. like, Mark is really showing he likes fat chicks. I'm like, God, y'all are just mean.
That's great.
Jesus. People can be so cool.
Chubby. I'm a chubby chaser.
You know, that interview with, I just saw the clip of Joe Rogan and Gina Carano. Did you guys see the clip where Gina was talking about how her like kickboxing instructor, who's like this guy from Thailand, who's, he saw her for the first time in a long time. He's like, oh, you're fat. You need to lose weight. Yeah. I was like, hey, foreigners are like that, though.
She
like,
said that she needs that. She's like, I need someone to keep me in check like that. And then she was saying now, Kevin Ross, who's been on the podcast before, she's like, he likes it, though. So it's like he plays into it. And then she was like, maybe he doesn't like this much, though.
You know, it is good to know, like, if you're getting out of shape or whatever, truly getting out of shape or you're truly getting unhealthy, it is good. Because she was saying something like, the people that really love you will tell you what you need to hear, right? Mm. It is necessary for having some people that'll just give you that brutal honesty. And, you know, you can bedside manner it a bit, but sometimes someone just needs to tell you to get your shit together.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, if someone needs to... You know, there's kind of a whole thing of shaming, right? But what do you get shamed for? Sometimes you get shamed for, you feel ashamed for things that maybe you shouldn't be doing. I don't know, right?
I remember fucking 9 years old, Brandon Cavett, who was a professional soccer player in Sacramento. He played in the MLS. He was my coach. And one day we were doing hill sprints. And I remember this because I was just like, damn, that hit me. I got to fucking go. I was like falling behind the team. He's like, Nsima, stop being a fucking prima donna. And I was like, I still remember it to this day.
Yeah.
But that boost, that kicked my ass, right? And I respond well to like that. Like I respond well if a coach is like, get your fucking shit together. Like, I don't want to have to hear that because I want my shit to be together, but I'll take it because sometimes you gotta
hear it.
You gotta hear it, you know? But at 9 years old, I mean, come on.
I'm grateful for that coach.
Yeah, me too.
You do need that sometimes, you know? It's hard to know what somebody's going to respond to, though. Sometimes that's, like, real detrimental. Then, like, there's certain kids that might not have showed up the next day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's tough.
Or and parents.
Then I'm sure a coach would feel, well, depending on the coach, but I'm sure they would kind of, you know, he's not trying to get you to, like, just quit. He's trying to get you to, like, dig deeper, right?
Yeah.
Trying to have encouragement to dig deeper. And I think now we know some different strategies and some different things, but things were different 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Things were different. People just kind of, like, they just threw it out there and they let it. I remember my football coach hitting people, you know? They had football pads on and a helmet.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, he'd come up and he'd whack you. And, like, we all actually, like, thought that was like a sign of respect more so than anything because he wanted you to do well. He'd come up and he'd smack you on the fucking helmet. He'd be like, come on, you can do better than that. And you're like, yeah, I can do. Like, he's got a fucking good point. Should he have hit us? I don't know. Like, maybe that's a step too far. I don't know. Didn't seem like it was wrong to me. It got us to work hard.
You know, in the context of like athletics, coaches can tell by the kids sometimes. If a coach is a good coach, they can tell if this kid is too sensitive to handle it or if this kid can buck up and handle this, right? So I do think, though, that sometimes that is necessary. And I might be more prone to thinking that's okay because I come from an African household where everything is, like, straight up. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no sugarcoating when it comes to discourse on what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, oh, baby, blah, blah, blah. My mom didn't have time for that shit.
This is your responsibility. I told you to take the garbage out. Now you're going to get smacked on the butt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now you're going
to get... Because I got to ask you three times. It doesn't make any sense. How about you just do it the first time and we don't have to go through this?
Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. Me and my girl were having conversation, though, because there was part of me that was not buying into, and this is not going into on the conversation that we were planning on having, but we probably will still have that. But we were talking about discipline, right? And I was talking about how I don't necessarily buy the idea of not using any, like, I don't want to have to slap a kid, but I'm like, does America truly have it right that you never should lay a hand on a kid? Like, what if sometimes they need a slap? Like, but I do think it's possible. I think it's truly possible. There's still something in the back of my head that is like, but who knows?
I think if you truly love your child, you will have to hurt them in some way.
Ooh.
You know, I just think that you have to. Does that mean physically? That's kind of up for you to decide, probably more so than me. Use your own discretion on that, I guess. But like, I think that you have to hurt their feelings. You have to say stuff that cuts deep. You have to tell them that their room's a mess and that that's not a great way. That's not a great way to go out into the world without skills to like keep yourself at least somewhat organized. You know, can we just get the bowl of cereal from out from underneath your bed? Like, is it serving some sort of purpose? You know, like, can there just be like some reasonable, you know, compromise? That's what I try to communicate with my children is like, what's reasonable? I know you like video games. I know you like being on your phone. I know you like being in a room by yourself or whatever the things are that they're doing. Let's just have open dialogue of like how much of that's going to go on every day. Are you on your phone 8 hours every day? Like to me, that sounds like too much. Mm-hmm. Can we, what number can we find that we can both agree on? And let's try to keep it in that range.
Yeah. My thing right now with my son is like, dude, he's 1.5 years old. Like he's not going to receive the message, you know? So it's kind of hard to, I guess, discipline when it's like, he doesn't necessarily know exactly what he's doing. Although we do things here and there, but like, as far as like, you know, like spanking or whatever, I think if it ever happens, it's just going to be a while to be like you understood that you did something really wrong and you understood why you got spanked. Like if he can understand and comprehend it, then maybe, but like if he's too young, that's where I'm like, ugh, like, I don't think so, man.
What about a firm no?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you guys done that? And then he cries, like kind of grab his arm a little bit. No, you know, you like, hey, like just don't mess with that.
Right.
Don't do that.
He thinks it's hilarious.
Yeah.
He laughs. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I'll say like the meanest parenting thing that we've done is like, well, we call it his octagon, but he has like an octagon of baby gates. Right. And it's like,
put him in prison.
Yeah. We lock him up for a little bit and then he gets just really upset because then we'll put him in there and then we like kind of take a step back and start to go do whatever we were doing. But it's mainly because like he'll get like we have like these like little golf clubs for him and he'll just like find a dog and just fucking whack him. I'm like, oh, like, dude, you can't do that. But he thinks it's hilarious. And I'm like, you're kind of a little shithead right now. Oh, and so we tell him no and he just thinks it's hilarious. He just laughs. And it's so cute because he's got these big old dimples and you want to let him get away with murder. But it's like, no, man, you can't do that. So it's, you know, put him in his octagon and then he gets upset and I cave in every time.
But, why are children psychopaths, bro? Like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bop, bop, hitting your dogs with a golf club.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, it's a very light plastic golf club. Does it, like, the dogs don't, like, whimper or anything, but they're just like, fuck, dude, stop. And I'm like, come on, man. Because, like, he'll come after me with that shit, too. And I'm like, nope.
Did you ever watch Game of Thrones?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh man, I remember the little Lannister kid. I'm not comparing you. There's this little he was the
evil bastard.
The evil boy king. He was kind of funny. Aurelius isn't that. Mm-hmm. He's too cute for that.
Oh, I was did you guys check out Ryan Holiday on Joe Rogan?
No.
I got to listen to it. It was really good.
When he was talking about like the five good emperors, because you know, like Marcus Aurelius' son was a dickhead. Mm. Right. So like he didn't rule the throne like very well.
Yeah. He's in the Russell Crowe movie, Gladiator.
Gladiator. There it is. But he was explaining why the five good emperors came to be like really fucking awesome. It's because Marcus Aurelius was adopted. And then so were like the other ones that were really, really good. They were adopted because they didn't come up as being little shithead, awesome kids in like, you know, in fucking whatever ruling the whatever fucking land.
Really? And
yeah. So that's, I thought that was really interesting because I'm like, fuck, I gotta, find a house back in South Sac to raise my son and then move back into Elk Grove.
they talked about, Marcus Aurelius, potentially not being a good dad because he had like some really fucked up kids.
Right.
But then they were like, you know, maybe this didn't have like, I don't know, maybe because they had everything that it was harder for them to behave better or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that happens a lot, you know, a lot of times someone who's truly known as being a great man by many is not a good man. Mm. You know, it's difficult to balance the two things out. Like we know, you know, Jordan and many others like just seem like they were involved in some bullshit here and there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just the way that goes sometimes.
Yeah. That's tough.
What was our topic? We were talking about bulking up?
Yeah, our boy Marty. Bulking up? If you, our boy Marty was switching bulk. It up. There was that. We will talk about that. But our boy Marty, I think he's in the military, and he has an issue of where to know how to back off. You know, because sometimes some people are used to training so hard, and there's been a message for like the past decade where training's supposed to be super difficult. You need to leave the gym feeling super sore. Some people are used to throwing out. We know people who are used to just throwing up. After multiple workouts, and that's how they know, I did a good job today. Mm-hmm. They lick the vomit off their lips and they keep going. So, you know, but we know that you can have workouts where you're in the gym, you work out hard, you leave the gym feeling better, and then you can work out again well the next day, even though you pushed yourself. So how can people, because I think he's military, how can people that are used to that, maybe they're former athletes or military, how can they learn how to back off the gas a bit and train to feel good, right?
Yeah, it's a fine line right there, because you do want to have that intense workout. For me personally, I've done a lot of workouts where I have gotten nauseous before. Most of those workouts were not self-induced. They were like for wrestling practice or football or something like that. And I may have just not truly been prepared for what it was that I was asked to do on a particular day. And therefore, you know, it made me feel sick, or I got, you know, trained pretty hard. But it seems like most of what we do as humans, it seems like most information that you're going to be able to gather and have be helpful and have it end up being something your body receives well and organizes well. It seems like most of that stuff is in a probably 90% of the time it would be in like, it'd be between a 7 and an 8 in terms of difficulty is what I believe where most people should hang out in their training. And that's not usually like, it's not that hard. And then how many sets look that way? I don't think a lot. I think maybe there's 3 or 4 opportunities in a workout to where your percentage is that high. But that might be more of a personal thing than anything else. I think that zone 2 cardio type thing that people use for running, runners have been using that, the Mathetone method, for a really long time. And that's how you run faster, is to actually run slower.
You know, I was watching a video. I saw this video pop up on my Instagram feed the other day. It was from some trainer, and he had the caption of like, watching my client leave the gym after a leg day and they cannot walk down the stairs. I've done a good job. And when it comes to like, for example, leg day is like the prime example, I think, for a lot of people, because like people think that if I have a great leg day, I can limp out of the gym, right? My quads are so sore that I'm limping, or I can barely walk. And that's kind of that mindset that I think isn't necessary. Even if you are an athlete, it's not necessary to leave being so wrecked that you can barely get into your car, or your back feels so rough that you can, you know, barely walk, or you feel like you're a cripple. I could understand in some cases, especially when it comes to, you know, even when it does come to powerlifting, I don't think that's necessary, especially with like how people know about like form and the mechanics of squatting and deadlifting. I don't think you need to have such pain when working with those types of loads. You might think, I don't know, what do you think about that? Because we're going to come talk about if you're not an athlete again, but specifically for powerlifters, because this is something I see with them a lot. Do you think that at a certain point, that's just a part of the game, since you've seen so many people that have gone through so much pain to get certain numbers and lifts?
I think something that helped me big time is that I used singles, doubles, and triples. I used a lot of singles. Now, when people think of doing a single, they think of a heavy max single. Mm-hmm. They think of a 1 rep max. I never did that. I mean, not that I never did that. It was very, very rare for me to do that. Mm-hmm. I would do a lift, and I would like ask you guys when I was done, like,
how'd it look?
Yeah, how'd that look? What do you think? And you guys would be like, dude, like, I don't know how it felt, but you smashed that. Mm-hmm. That looked easy. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, maybe I'll go up 50 pounds. And you guys are like, yeah, easy, no question. So there was no question that I could do the lift. A lot of times the singles that I was going for are things I could have probably easily done for 3 reps or maybe even 5 reps. Could have done definitely multiple sets with that same weight. So I might take that next attempt, and then that one's slower. And that one's like if you go for another one, like we're not quite sure is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't usually take that one. When I was younger, I did that a little bit, but as soon as I started to learn that that was not beneficial for me, that's the thing to think about. What is beneficial? You want the minimum effective dosage. We're not trying to like just overload ourselves with the maximum all the time. So a lot of the main sets that I would hit, the heaviest weights that I would hit, even though they were heavy by other people's view, I would be able to manage them well. And that's something I noticed in a lot of other lifters in the gym too. Stan Efferding, when he came through, Eric Spoto, and a lot of the other greats that came through Super Training Gym, I was like, all these guys have the same thing in common. When they do their lift, the lift is really heavy. They're still improving all the time, but the lift isn't hard. And that was something that I was like, I need to take note of that, and I need to just continue to do that in my training.
What if someone's program calls for whatever certain percentage, and it just... I don't know, man. Like it may be like they fucked up or whatever it may be. Like they still have to hit this number because that's what the program says. And then that's where like shit kind of can end up, you know, injuries can occur, right?
Yeah. You know, everything can break down to numbers, but I don't believe in following them super strictly. You know, I would advise people to do things in reverse, you know, add up the numbers after the fact. Like, what did you do for the day? You did 87% and you did 3x3. Well, were all 3 sets of 3 clean? Did they look good? That's something that's noteworthy. But if you just did a percentage because it was called for and you didn't do it very well, that's not a job well done. Like that's not what you're trying to do. And you can get stronger even by kind of lifting like an idiot and even kind of going for it. And there's definitely room for people that are newer to kind of go for it here and there and to have some messed up lifts. But most of what I advise for people, when people are like, my coach, I hear people talking about their fucking coach all the time, comes to bodybuilding, and I'm always like, fuck your coach, man. Your coach don't know shit.
That should be a shirt. Fuck your coach.
Yeah, fuck your honestly, coach. Honestly, that's in be the true. Asshole.
Okay, you took it.
Okay,
there.
Okay. I'm
what,
sorry.
What if we print that on the inside,
cover
though?
Both these guys' ears.
Yeah. What if we printed it on the inside though? Like it says, "Fuck your coach," and then like, you flip like it upside down,
like the Lululemon shit, where they have it on the fuck your coach
in the ass.
It says, "Fuck your coach" on like the chest, and then on the little like notes under the shirt, just in the ass.
Amen. Y'all do what you like.
But I usually advise people to back off whatever percentages they got. It actually doesn't have anything to do with the coach necessarily. The coach is just trying to give you information. Yeah. It's like an input. And then you decide, you know, what you're supposed to do with that. But some people will kind of blindly follow that information. And if you just hit a lift that's 93% and it was awful and it calls, you know, for you to do a 97% lift for the day, you probably should do multiple sets of that 93%. See if you can clean that up. If you can, and you have a successful lift at that, then maybe you go back and you do the 97%. But lifting poorly is not going to help you lift better. It's not all about just lifting more weight. It's about lifting better, doing the movement better. So that's what you want to try to aim for over time, is to execute the lift better.
And then, like, there are also aspects of this. If you are working with somebody, typically, you know, who knows how you slept last night? Who knows what you ate the day before, how you recovered? If you wake up the next day and you go into the gym and you have something on the program and you're like, I don't have confidence I'll be able to hit that, typically people will have a range. Like if you're not feeling good today, go for this. You don't always have to hit the number that's on the sheet. You shouldn't. There's some days where everything's amazing and that number, like let's say that was what you were supposed to go for, but your coach says you could go for heavier if you feel good, then you can go for heavier. But you really need to, you need to learn yourself and understand, like, if you're not confident enough to touch a certain load on a certain day, it's best to stay a little bit below that, as it'll allow you to just be safer and have a lesser risk of injury.
I like that a lot. And that leads me into the next question, which is like progressive overload, where I think, again, people can really fuck themselves up because it's like, oh, I did, you know, whatever X amount of weight for X amount of reps last week, so let's go ahead and up the ante. But like what you just said, got bad sleep, ate like shit the day before, whatever it may be. And it's like, it's not there, but that's what the program says, or that's what I'm going to shoot for. So is progressive overload like always a part of the equation?
You know, this is an interesting thing, because we talked about the progressive overload versus progressive overstimulus the other day. Mm-hmm. And the thing is you don't, like, even though progressive overload is science-based and you do want to be moving more, potentially moving more volume over time, there's a lot of different ways to get new stimulus. And there are other things you can look at other than just the amount of volume you've done, the amount of weight you moved in case you increased in weight, or the amount of sets you've done. You can also pay attention to, like what you said, how clean things looked this day versus the day before. Let's just say that you're doing a chest press, three sets of 10 for 50 pounds. And the next workout, you do another three sets of 10 for that 50 pounds. But the last time you did it, it was like, it felt super hard. And this time it was much easier. Mm-hmm. There's a progression in there in terms of how clean it was. You could potentially add a little bit more to it, but you've progressed. I see this a lot now with even the calisthenic stuff that I'm doing. It's not loaded. It's just my body weight. But I find that I'm able to get into deeper ranges when doing different movements. And I can work in those deeper ranges. That is a progression. If you're now, instead of chest pressing here, if you're able to get a little deeper with that same weight comfortably, that is progressive over stimulus. You are now stimulating more muscle fibers because you're going to be able to work with the same weight in a deeper range of motion. Doesn't mean you had to work with actually add more pounds or add more reps, but you added a deeper ROM with that movement and it was easier. Progressive over stimulus. So we can look at all these other things other than purely adding weight to the bar and adding reps and adding sets to add more stimulus to what we're doing and make progress.
It's hard to get stuff ingrained into your system when the intensity is too great. If you can't like think about it, then a lot of times it's a little bit too heavy. If you could think about it too much, it's probably a little bit too light. Like there should be kind of some happy medium of where you just kind of have to do the lift and almost get through it in a way. But you do, if you think about it, there's always room to improve. There's always room to do better on any movement that you're doing. You could you could be doing some of those twists that we were doing, you know, today. We were just doing some twists with a cable, like a cable twist type thing. Can you do that and relax your eyes a little bit? Can you relax your face? Can you flex as you're going through a range of motion? Can you flex your left oblique more? Can you relax the back shoulder that's not involved as much?
Are you able to breathe easier when doing the movement?
Breathing adds a huge element. What if just going through a range of motion, you decide to hold your breath a little bit? You might want to be cautious with that while you're lifting weights. But if it's a lighter weight and you're doing some walking lunges and you're trying to work on something in particular, imagine saying, I'm going to do this 50-yard lunge, and I'm only going to do nasal breathing. And to start, I'm going to hold my breath, you know, just for like 5 seconds, a couple reps worth. Mm-hmm. That changes everything. That makes the intensity of what you're doing that much more challenging. So think about like mastery, trying to master a particular lift, trying to get it down to where when people see you do it, they're like, wow, that guy's clearly a professional at this. That looks different than when everybody else does that.
Prep Project fam, this episode is brought to you by Vivo Barefoot Shoes. We've been wearing these shoes for almost a year now. They're flexible. They have a wide toe box. They allow your feet to get connected to the ground, and they will make your feet stronger. And they don't look like shit like a lot of these other barefoot shoes. Andrew, how can they get them?
You guys got to head over to vivobarefoot.com and at checkout, enter promo code POWERPROJECT to save 20% off your entire order. Links to them down in the description as well as the podcast show notes. Let's get back to this video. I love that. One thing that where I used to fuck myself up is like paying attention to, I'll just say, fitness culture. So like watching like a Mike Isertel video where he's throwing up on leg day. And so I would go into the gym the next day looking at my program and be like, yep, I gotta kill myself today. And what inevitably would happen is maybe I would get through it, maybe I would get hurt, but I would just destroy myself and then try to go into the gym the next day. And I couldn't understand why. This literally did happen. Why I would get stuck under the bar at 95 pounds trying to bench, because like I was just fucking exhausted and I still just like worked through it. So how much of killing it today is going to take away from tomorrow? Like how much of that do you need to be considering?
It usually crushes you. A lot of times it crushes you a couple days later. We all know people that get really fired up. They start losing weight. They start getting momentum. And you might see them in the gym. You might see them around. And they're sporadically here. And they're sporadically giving it a good effort. They're here for an hour. They're putting in good workouts. Maybe they go Monday. Maybe they go Tuesday. And then they're just not here again, you know. Or they come to super training all fired up about powerlifting. And on the third time they're here, they ask, hey, can I do more workouts than just the four that are recommended? And I usually tell people that's not a good idea, like in the beginning, because you're getting acclimated to it. And sure enough, that same person nearly every single time is not sticking with powerlifting for more than a couple months because it gets so hyped up. They get so into it. So you have to think about your energy on different days. I know there's the mentality of like, fuck it, man, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to get mine today and I'm going to go as hard as I possibly can on this. And it's good to, like, whatever it is that you're doing, it's good to put the best effort that you can into it. It doesn't mean to like lift like a slouch. It doesn't mean that you're going to get strong just by lifting light weights. What it does mean is that you need to be focused in on the intent of what it is that you're doing and try to get the most out of that. Like, try to actually draw the picture of the tree, you know, try to actually follow through with the assignment, stay inside the lines, you know, try to actually follow through with what's recommended before you go going outside of everything. A lot of times those same people that ask for like more workouts or they want to do more stuff, that you find out they didn't do the glute ham raises, they didn't do the med ball sit-ups, they didn't. Like, they just did the deadlift and they did a couple squats and then they're, you know, asking about like, can they do these side bodybuilding workouts? And you're like, dude, you didn't even do the five exercises that were suggested for today.
They cut that corner. Just spinning in circles.
They cut that corner and you'll find that you'll feel, when you're overdoing it, you'll feel it and you'll talk yourself out of workouts more often. That morning run that you were going to do or that walk that you wanted to do, you'd be like, man, I pushed that off again. I wonder if there's something I'm doing. And like, that's a good question to ask. Am I maybe not as methodical with my lifting as maybe I should be a little bit more organized with it? Because maybe I am pushing it a little bit too hard and maybe it's making a lot of other things suffer.
You know, one other thing to think about too, whether you're a competing athlete or not, because I see a lot of people who they'll go into the gym, they'll do their routine, they'll come out of the gym, they'll be like, oh, my back, I have that pain again. And they'll have this pain over and over and over again. So you got to ask yourself, number one, is what I'm doing actually helping me? Like, not only that, but is it helping me? And is it pushing me towards a goal that I have? Like, is this pain that I have every time after I squat helping me? Is it helping me become healthier? Because like, even though your squat might be going up, the pain that you have after you squat, maybe you need to figure out the mechanics, or maybe you just need to stop doing that for a little bit and find something else that doesn't cause you to limp out of the gym because you're so dedicated to doing this specific movement, right? Because again, the reason why a lot of us are doing this is so that we can be healthier and move better and be better at being humans. But you're not better at moving or being a human if every time you leave the place, the gym that's supposed to help you feel better, you feel worse. So evaluate what's causing you pain and don't just keep going down that way because your program says so, or because, you know, you see all these impressive Instagram lifts. Don't keep going down that path. Figure out a way to adjust this so it's, because it, I don't think it needs to be painful. I don't think it need, you can be sore, but it doesn't need to cause you literal pain where now what you're doing on a day-to-day basis is harder because of your workout.
And that's for athletes and?
Like, I think for both.
Both and a weekend warrior?
And a weekend warrior. Okay. Because an athlete, you're trying to increase your athletic performance. So yeah, you do need to push things, but to the extent that it like takes away from how you just are on a day-to-day basis. Some athletes will say, yeah, that's a sacrifice you need to make. I'm an athlete that says, no, that's not a sacrifice you need to make. And I differ on that opinion, you know, cause it's like, it's the, you gotta go through that pain to get to the pinnacle. I don't buy it. Mm-hmm. I really don't buy it. I think some people have gone through a lot, large amounts of pains to get to the pinnacle. And some people have gotten to the pinnacle, come out and they weren't fucked up.
What about if you really love it? You know what I mean? Like, so you go and you do it and you do your workout And obviously it's really easy to get carried away with it. But for me, like, I got made fun of and ripped apart so much early in my powerlifting career. They were like, you fucking suck at this. Like, that was awful. Like, that's really the way that you train. Like, you trained at Westside. Like, what the fuck was that? That was shitty. But in the back of my mind, I was always like, you know what? You motherfuckers are all going to pay because I'm going to go slow and I'm going to go steady. Mm-hmm. It works for me and everything else. And I'm working on what I can work on and I'm fixing what I can fix simultaneously. I understand this to be a long process. So that's cool that you're ahead of me now, but where are you going to be 5 years from now?
Yeah.
You're going to be in the fucking dust. You're going to be looking at my back. You're going to be looking at me winning, getting victories over you and all the people that you train. And I'm going to be kicking your fucking ass because I wasn't scared to pay attention to the details. And I wasn't scared to like sit in the pocket and do the stuff that was monotonous. It was fucking boring. I would still do the workouts as recommended. I would still push myself hard. I still would, do the box squats and I still would do the max effort day. And occasionally I would go too heavy because I was in a flock of people where you're just kind of letting it all go, right? You're letting it all hang out, so to speak. But I would watch other people fail. And I was like, that guy fails the same way every time. He has the same fucking story every time he comes in. And when he comes in next week, he's going to have the same story. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's going to be a different story every time I come in because I'm going to keep working on stuff and I'm just going to keep nitpicking these details. And over a period of time, I may not beat you in the squat. I may not beat you in the bench. I may not beat you in the deadlift, but I will beat you in powerlifting because I will have a bigger total because I will pay attention to the whole thing, which is your fucking total, which is the most important thing. Meanwhile, I'd watch people, they would fail in the same spots every time. And it was crazy to me. It was like insane. I was like, this guy fails the same. I don't even need to see his lift. I know what's going to happen and I know what his complaint's going to be. Oh man, if I ever get the shoulder fixed, you know, fucking everybody look out. It's like, you're never going to do it. So why the fuck are you talking about shit that you're never going to do? If I could lock out this arm a little bit better, cool. Yeah, that's great. But you still train the same way. You're not even addressing what the actual issue is.
That's amazing. And then, so another aspect, this is a little bit like of a side road. So I don't know if Marty has a family or maybe other people listening. I do have a family and sometimes I would go a little bit too far in the gym and then it would take away from the rest of my day. Now, we're in a pretty cool spot where we can just walk over to the gym and then walk into here and podcast. But like when I had an 8-to-5 job or something, like, you know, I was like a professional gym goer, you know, like that was my job. I pretend that sometimes. And now it's like, I make fun of people that they kind of like, oh, I go super hard in the gym. That's my life. It's like, well, actually you do have the rest of your day and the rest of your life to focus on. So like, if you are giving that much to the gym and then you go home and you're just like dead on the couch or, you know, your family is like, you're missing them because you're so exhausted from giving too much into the gym. Like that's going to kind of fuck some things up too. And I've been there for sure where I wasn't present in the moment with my family because I was like, oh, I crushed it today. Nobody fucking cares. Like nobody gives a goddamn, like it just doesn't matter. So that's something else. Again, like I said, that's a little bit like a detour in what we were talking about, but it's just something that came to my mind because yeah, like I see dudes that just want to, that's all they want to do. And it's like, man, like you have like some important people that are relying on you to be there for them.
Yeah. You're just trying to be better for what? For yourself? You know, and yeah, you do want to be able to like function afterwards and not just crash on the couch, right?
Yeah.
When you're on your own, if you have the luxury to kind of just like spend all that time doing that, that's fucking good.
And that's a great time to do it, right?
Great time to do it. But like you mentioned, like when you do have other people that may want some of your attention and you're killing yourself so hard with your physical activity that you're a zombie outside of it.
Can you be on top again? You know what I mean, like if you're too tired because you did too many tricep extensions to hold yourself up, it's like, come on.
I can't move my clavicle, babe. Can I just lie on my back, please? That's me right now. And I'm loving it. I'm fucking loving it. I don't have to work. All right.
Like 6 months, like still in CMA, your clavicle's still bothering you?
I can't.
Hurt so bad.
Oh. I'll take a blowjob, but I'm not sure I'll be able to do much else.
Oh my God.
Dude, the biggest takeaway I've got so far from this episode is the range thing. I really like that. You know, when you're saying, like, if the program calls for X of X, like, give yourself a range. I think that is very, very helpful.
Yeah, you know, no, because number one, in the past, when I've been programmed for, or when I would follow lifts to a T, but I've gone into the gym and I've been like, I did deadlift that today. Mm-hmm. My body doesn't want to, man, but I'd still go for it. I'd be like, oh, got it. And I'd just be limping out, right? So you have to, you know, you're not a robot. Not every, like, you don't, mm-hmm. you might sleep bad one night and something mm-hmm. might go bad the day before. You're not a robot. You might not always recover the same. So you have to be able to call it on certain days. That's really good athletes know what they can do on a day-to-day basis. Mm. They've done it so long that they know today I can push, today I need to take my foot off the gas. And if you can figure out that, you can learn that about yourself, you're going to be able to be doing this lifting thing for a long time. I was watching a video the other day, Dexter Jackson. He was talking about how he just, at a certain point in his career, he just stopped. I'm not telling people to stop training with barbells, but he just focused on doing machines and stuff because he noticed how his body was feeling. And he still was killing people. I think he won Masters Olympia recently. But he's the only guy from that generation that's not really broken. Mm-hmm. That's still going and not right. broken, because as time went by, he paid attention to how his body felt and he adjusted his training. He didn't just do something that he felt he needed to do because everybody else was doing it. A lot of bodybuilders shitted on the way he trained, doing mainly machines and stuff.
You got to train like Ronnie Coleman.
Or Dorian Yates.
Right.
But you see how, like, even Dorian Yates has, like, complimented Dexter Jackson on the way he's trained and been like, that's something that's it's good that you did that. That's right. Why you're here so long.
Right. Yeah. It's smart to be able to audible, you know, to be able to and not be afraid to change up what you're doing. I know people, yeah, they are always kind of like pissy about the machines and stuff. But I mean, think about, I guess you can hurt yourself on a machine. You can hurt yourself doing anything, but it's going to be less likely that you're going to get hurt on a machine. Usually if you're going to use a machine, you're going to adhere to probably bodybuilding reps, you know, 3 to 4 sets, 10 to 15 reps. And when you stay in those ranges, it's harder to get hurt. When listening to someone like Jay Cutler, you know, he tore his bicep, and that was trying a heavy military press, trying to hike the weight up to the shoulders. That's actually a fairly common injury. I've seen people hurt themselves doing heavy dumbbell or barbell preacher curls. I've seen people tear biceps on deadlifts. I've seen people tear pecs on bench pressing. I'm not saying to get rid of all these movements, but it might be something to consider. And even trying to get your legs to be bigger can be tricky if you have a lot of knee pain. But are you just like going through crazy amounts of knee pain just to get your squats in? I don't think that makes sense. I think what would make sense, if you really love squatting, is to try to address what you think is wrong with the knee. Try to at least make it better. Maybe you can't fix it completely yourself, or maybe even with the help of somebody else, maybe you can't fix it entirely. But all the stuff that we share on this podcast about the type of shoes that you wear, about training your tibs and the knees over toes stuff, some of the Ben Patrick stuff that we've shared, hopefully there's enough information out there to where you can fix your knee or you can fix your elbow, and you can start to mold your training around what you have going on. Because how much do you really care about that squat? Like, is it that important? Like, are you holding on that much? Are you currently a competitive power lifter to where it's critical that you have a big squat? Can you also pause for a second and do different types of squats? Why not try to do a 100-pound dumbbell for sets of 10, work your way up to a 100-pound dumbbell for sets of 10 on the slam board? You know, and if that starts to feel too easy, or even 50 pounds. But if anything starts to feel too easy, change up the rest interval. Change up the amount of reps. Change up the tempo. What if you go 4 seconds on the way down, 4 seconds on the way up? You're going to be in a lot of trouble on that slant board, even probably with 50 pounds. So don't be afraid to get out of the box. I encourage you to get out of the box. Just stop trying to put yourself into that thing where that's the main thing that you're obsessed with when it's hurting you.
And this is one thing to think about. It's cool that we have so many different things we can focus on. Like, we're doing all these things to improve the way we breathe. We're doing all these things to improve our feet and our movement. Recently, I had an impact injury in jiu-jitsu. I was doing something with somebody, and then my body slammed on the ground. And I heard this big crunch on my clavicle area. I heard it, right? I got up, Okay. The next day or later on that day, I was coughing and it was hurting here in my clavicle. I noticed it was bruised. Putting my arm over my head hurt. But I was like, well, okay, this sucks. I'm not going to be able to roll for a little bit. I'm not going to be able to do certain lifts, but there's a lot of things I can still work on because there's a lot of tools that we utilize. We use kettlebells. We do body weight work. We have stuff with cables. I still have jump rope stuff. I have all these things I can do with balance and body weight that I can still progress the things that I was doing while backing off of this a little bit to allow it to heal. But when it comes to, you know, if all you do is just straight barbell work or you're only doing certain types of lifts, when this is gone, your workouts are gone. The training is gone. You don't have anything you can progress anymore. So that's why it's good to implement some different things into your training so that when something does happen, you have something you can continue to work on as it heals. You're not just out of the gym because that's what happens to a lot of people. They get injured, then you see them a few years later, I'm like, what happened, dude? It's like, I got this injury and I just stopped training.
Yeah, work smarter, not harder, but also harder and smarter.
You have a lot of tools. Like at right. this point now, we have so many tools that we can use and do in the gym that's continuing to help us to get into better shape and increase different capacities for movement and strength, right? We're not just stuck with certain movements. That's why we're always progressing.
There's certain things that you can do as well that you're not going to immediately even notice whether you're good or bad at it, really. Mm. Like something like a med ball toss. Like, what's your previous marker for throwing a med ball as high up in the air as you possibly can? You probably don't remember the last time you just tried to chuck one up in the air as high as you can, mm-hmm. or to throw it backwards over your head as powerfully as you can, to slam it into the ground. There's there's less degrees of like measure. Like when you do a squat, if you're a 200-pound guy and you can't squat like double your body weight, then that's not very strong, right? Like we have these markers. When you push or pull the sled and you do it forward and backward, you don't really know. Like, I guess I could see that maybe a person has the sled loaded up with lots of plates, but even something like the tank, there's no like, okay, maybe it's on like level 3 and it's on a hard level. But my point here is that, as Andrew has pointed out before, with the weights not having any numbers on them, it's kind of hard to tell, like, do you care a ton about your cable crossover strength? Or do people really care a lot about their like lat pull down strength? It's nice to see the weight go up, and it's nice to see, you know, I handled the stack, you know, occasionally on some stuff where you can do the stack. But a cable crossover is like a great example, or even like a chest fly. Like, you're really taking a lot of pride in trying to grab those 70s for chest flies, and it just hurts, and it's like ripping your shoulders apart. Or would you rather actually do the exercise with good form, get a good stretch, and maybe have the 25s or the 30s or whatever your body can handle?
Yeah, because everybody clowns on like the quarter squat, right? Like, oh, I got a PR, but then, you know, people will see like you didn't go to depth and all that shit or whatever. But then with, yeah, like you're right, like with the chest fly, yeah, you're just going to end up pressing it, you know, if it's too much, or you're just going to fuck your shoulder up, which I've done too many times.
Yeah. Yeah. I think with this conversation, the big thing is just to shift your perspective on your goals in the gym. Like we've shifted, well, I know I've shifted in turn to like, okay, I'm improving on a lot of things, but I'm going to leave the gym feeling good for the rest mm-hmm. of my day. I'm still going to make progress, but I'm going to make sure I leave the gym feeling good. Might be a little tired, but I'm going to feel good. Whereas in the past, if I was doing certain things, it's like, okay, this is my goal in the gym. It doesn't matter how I feel after. I need to get this done, mm-hmm. right? So think about how you'll feel after and progress off of that, you know, because there are certain times when you need to push yourself. I was mentioning like with jujitsu, if somebody's getting ready for a competition and let's say they're not a weekend warrior, but they're getting ready for a competition and they're doing rounds and then they rest around. It's like, no, okay, maybe push yourself this round and go when you're tired. Push that, you know, push your cardio a bit, but you don't have to do that all the time if it's not something you're competing at, you know?
I think you want to treat the gym like a classroom, you know? You want to, like, get something from it, learn something from it, have, like, a take-home thing from it. Like, mm-hmm. I learned the coordination of, like, being able to do this movement better. I was able to flex my stomach better. I was able to, you know, engage my glutes better on this particular movement. I think there's just, like, so many different ways you can go about, you know, your workouts. But I really like some of the stuff that we've moved into. But even when I was lifting heavier, these were still focuses I had. Mm-hmm. And I think it was something that helped keep me from getting too many injuries, and it helped promote me being able to make progress for a long time to be able to hit some of the lifts that I wanted to hit, because I wasn't going too hard. I wasn't going too heavy too often. I would go heavy and I would handle some weight and I would occasionally mess up and I'd occasionally go too hard. But every time I went too hard, I was like, ah, that was just too much. There was other days where I worked out and I specifically remember, and I remember writing it down even saying like, I got stronger today. Like I went there, I took what I was able to gather for that particular day. Mm-hmm. And I fucking grabbed it and I put it in my gym bag and I've held on to it. I captured it. I captured the intent and the meaning of the day. And the meaning of the day wasn't to go in there and just destroy myself.
Mm. I did that a lot. And Zuma, how did we get to this topic?
Yeah, our boy Marty was in Discord. Mm-hmm. And in the channel, I think it was the topic discussion channel in our Discord, he asked us to talk about this. So yeah, you guys need to check out Discord. We have 1,560 members around there. There's different channels where people are doing like accountability and talking about different stuff. But there's also a channel where you guys can input what topics you're mm-hmm. curious for us to talk about or you want us to delve into. Mm-hmm. And we will take it from there.
And we appreciate that.
And we do appreciate it. We do appreciate it. But yeah, there's a lot of people in there. People are doing cool shit in that Discord. We're almost at 1,600 members. So click the link in the description to join us on Discord.
How does someone learn jiu-jitsu? I think, like, obviously somebody could learn, like, if you just destroy someone every day, they're going to, like, learn something. But if you just destroy them every day and you don't explain anything, like, that's not a great way to learn, right? Like if you're, you wouldn't even be able to go like 100% on me because you would just like break a bunch of stuff on me. But like if you went hard on me and just kept tapping me and you're like, Mark, you fucking suck. Like how am I going to be able to transition into like getting better with an intensity that I'm not prepared to like handle?
Oh yeah. So like, you know, in most schools, they have the instruction where like the teacher shows a specific movement and you drill it with your partner. And then you go into sparring. But when you're a white belt, at least for me, I didn't have a wrestling background or a grappling background. So grappling just didn't make sense. So whenever I would roll with somebody, the first things that you learn in jiu-jitsu are escapes because, you know, you're having to escape things. So someone will tap you in something. And my thing was like, if you're rolling with someone good, they'll kind of explain to you, okay, do this.
They'll slow things down and they'll talk to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially upper belts. They'll slow things down.
Like, hey, I was able to get you in that because you're a dumbass.
Yeah. When I was a white belt, because I was bigger, people did love just fucking my shit up. But even so, they'd always say, okay, well, when I get here on you, this is how you escape. So that's the thing. Your first things you learn aren't necessarily submissions. Like you'll learn to drill submissions, but you won't necessarily be able to get anybody in those for a while. You're going to be learning how to escape since you're always just going to be escaping things. And then some of your movement's going to get better where you'll start actually getting submissions here and there. And it just continues to evolve from there. You'll start, you know, there's some roles where people are like, okay, let's just start in close guard or let's start with me on your side control and you escape. So there's specific training. Mm. So you can drill specific things on how to get out of a back take, how to get out of side control, how to get out of a specific guard, right? There's so many ways to train it where it's just like it, especially if you're like, you were like me and you didn't have a grappling background, it's like a different language. But there comes a point where things click and then you just start making sense.
Learn stuff in little chunks, little pieces.
Yeah.
It's over a long period of time. Things are slowed down and then they're sped up and you go, wait, what happened? Things mm-hmm. are slowed down again and then they're sped back up and you go back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah.
That's the way you learn football. That's the way you learn basketball. That's the way you learn anything. And again, just bringing it back into running. If you just look up something really simple like the Mathetone method, you'll see there's a lot of information out there about this kind of zone two cardio, how you can, through zone two cardio, you can stretch the heart and you can increase your aerobic capacity very, very easily.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about lifting, we are tapping into different things. We're more on the anaerobic side and we are tapping into the central nervous system. But the body works very similar. This nervous system does need like a more intense feedback than you just going at 80%. It probably needs you to get sometimes closer to 90%, but how often you do that, that's going to be determined on how long you've been training for and stuff like that. But for the most part, people that are newer, they don't even need to go into that. They don't even need to really worry about 90%. Stay in the 80% range. Don't overdo it. Don't push yourself too hard in the beginning. You're going to push yourself too hard anyway because you're not going to have a good barometer of like where you are on certain things. So that'll just naturally happen. When somebody tells you to hit up a bench workout at 80%, you might not even know where 80% is. And then you're like, fuck, man, I went way too heavy on that workout. All the reps were shitty, or I missed some reps, I missed some sets. Things like that. If you just kind of keep the simple principle in mind that I've shared many times, is that your last rep or your last set should look like the first rep of your first set. That should keep you in line to have a little bit of a governor on your training to where you're not overdoing it. Andrew, want to take us on out of here, buddy?
Yes. Thank you, everybody, for checking out today's episode. Please drop us a comment down below. We would sincerely appreciate that. And please like and subscribe, all that good stuff. Turn on those bell notifications so you guys don't miss another upload. Follow the podcast at MB Power Project on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. My Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter is at I am Andrew Z Fumble. And Seema, where are you at?
And Seema on Instagram and YouTube. And Seema Yin Yang on TikTok and Twitter. Mark.
I'm at Mark Smelly Bell. Strength is never weakness. Weakness never strength. Catch you guys later.
I know, me too. There's a lot of allergies around here right now.
Mm-hmm.